Good morning, and it's Monday, and that means it's time for Mountain Money. This is Larry Warren along with Doug Wells, and welcome to another great day. And we have a good show today. Of course, we say that every week, but we mean it every week,
That's
Doug.
That's right. That's right. They are good shows.
We have Brad Peterson with us. He's the director of the Utah Outdoor Recreation Office, and this is a unique office, really only in state government. It only exists in the state of Utah because we have so much great outdoor recreation. So we'll be talking with Brad about what he does in the coming hour.
And our second guest is going to be Tracy Larson, who is the vice president for the program development at the Bank of America Fork. And the discussion is going to be, unfortunately, on a topic that's all too common here in Utah and across the country, and that is elder financial abuse. People taking advantage of senior citizens, caregivers, unfortunately family members and others. And Tracy's going to come in and talk to us about that important subject. Just as a quick teaser, believe it or not, the Adult Protective Service Division investigated almost 2,000 cases of elder financial abuse in the state of Utah alone. And then our final guest, I'm going to keep as a mystery here. I'm going to read to you a little quote. You're going to love kind of their mission statement. Here's this mystery company's mission statement. We believe in quality over quantity. Community over corporate, planet over profit, and sweating the small stuff and the big stuff. How great does that sound, Larry?
Excellent. If they can fulfill that mission and still make a little more than a small profit.
Well, fortunately, they're selling something where the profit margin's probably pretty high. And a little hint, their next line is, we roast, grind, brew, and repeat. So stay tuned to Mound Money on KPCW, and we'll be right back.
Juniper Landing is proud to support our local radio station, KPCW. Juniper Landing is a new, whole ownership townhome community located at the base of Canyons Resort, adjacent to the Waldorf Astoria Park City, with a model open daily. Our website is juniperlandingparkcity.com.
Hi, this is Greg Cropper of Jones Waldo Park City, a Park City law office. I've been a big fan of KPCW since its first broadcast back in 1980. Jones Waldo has been representing clients from Summit and Wasatch counties since 1875. You can find us at joneswaldo.com.
This is Christian Bohr with the Park City Chamber Bureau. Joining the Chamber Bureau is a great investment for your business. Chamber Bureau members enjoy a wide array of benefits, including instant credibility, weekly newsletters with relevant information, educational seminars, webinars, and much more. Information on joining is online at visitparkcity.com or call us at 649-6100. The Park City Chamber Bureau is a nonprofit organization and a proud supporter of KPCW.
Welcome back to Mountain Money on KPCW. We are headed to a high of 86 under nothing but sunshine. So get out and play, especially if you can get onto a river and fish or float on a tube. Or
in the morning and afternoon. It was pretty toasty this weekend.
Indeed. Or get out to Jordanelle or Deer Creek or Echo or Rockport. It's just summer in Utah and a great time to get outdoors. And we have Brad Peterson with us, director of the Utah Outdoor Recreation Office. Welcome, Brad.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Our pleasure. And we are interested in what you do because it's, as I said in the preliminary, it's kind of unique in the nation. Is there another director of an outdoor recreation office in the country?
No, you know, so a year later, since this position was formed coming through the 2013 legislative session at the request of Governor Herbert, the state of Utah is still the only state to have this particular position.
And it was created by the state legislature at the behest of the governor. And if I remember right, it may have been some outreach from the outdoor retailers group, which pressed the governor to be more involved in the recreation economy of Utah and be more thoughtful about public land management and the like. Was that some of the impetus to create this position?
Yeah, most definitely. So, you know, as far back as like August of 2012, when they were meeting with the governor, having discussions about the outdoor retailer show, as well as just the overall size of the recreation economy in Utah. You know, the OIA, the Outdoor Industry Association, was pointing out the fact that the state of Utah has, you know, we have departments that oversee everything from tourism to energy development to manufacturing to a number of different, you know, our highest sectors and economies, and that we didn't have anybody in particular just watching out for outdoor recreation. So, you know, they sent him back and said, you know, why don't you go think about it? What are the options we have available to us? That was maybe late 2012, and by January of 2013, he had come forth with what's now the 59-page Utah Outdoor Recreation Vision. And from that vision, then, they put it through Senate Bill 73 in the 2013 legislative session to create the Outdoor Recreation Office.
Okay, so boil that 59 pages down to 25 words or less. What's the mission of that office?
You know, I mean, what kind of my elevator speech is that I go out and try to use our unique natural assets to help businesses, communities, and individuals thrive. And so, you know, there's a great statistic that I like. You know, it's not a hard statistic, but it says for every dollar that somebody spends on something like a mountain bike or a pair of skis or a, you know, even a fishing pole or anything else, that somebody's going to spend about four times that amount actually out there using it, creating the experience with that. So on one hand, so you kind of have this equation, right? On one hand, I'm out there chasing the outdoor industry. There's currently, you know, we're working with multiple companies from around the United States to move their U.S. headquarters to Utah and to the Wasatch Front and to rural Utah. We're also working with Asian companies to move their U.S. headquarters here and a number of other things. But on the other hand, once we have the outdoor industry here, then we're really focused on trying to get out there and work with rural Utah and the rest of where this $4, right, the four times amount will get spent on actually creating the experience with that product.
So it sounds like you have a pretty broad range of responsibilities, and I wonder, as you look at it, it sounds like you've been in the position just over a year now.
Correct.
You know, how do you judge success? What are the four or five key metrics that you're looking at?
It's a great question. So on one hand, then, if you're looking at it back with the outdoor industry, I mean, I certainly have a unique relationship with the CEOs and of many of these outdoor-related companies. We're continuing to work those. If you've seen recently that Osprey PAX just announced that they're going to move their U.S. distribution and order fulfillment to the Wasatch Front from Cortez and Durango, Colorado, where they've been for many, many years. So we're continuing to just bring more companies in. There's another company that we're working with today that's, you know, an outdoor-related company that's just very large. We're looking to move it here. So on one hand is that. On the other hand, then, out in rural Utah, it's working with these communities to find ways to monetize public lands that we don't own. And if you look at that, for example, where Utah as a whole is about 67% public lands, then you've got three ways to go out and, as I say, monetize, right? One is certainly natural resources, and that's a play that you either have or you don't have. Another one is agriculture. And the third, and more importantly and more increasing, is actually recreation. So as I go out and work with communities like Daggett County around Flaming Gorge, where we're looking at putting in, you know, just an enormous mountain bike infrastructure, you know, mountain bike trails, it does wonders for trying to help these communities grow their recreation economy.
And it strikes me, out of those three choices on how to use public lands, that the outdoor recreation is the one that is the most sustainable and the best match with a state that is constrained by water.
Sure, most definitely. And, you know, I see it every day. I mean, that's why I end up on the road multiple days a week. Last week I was in San Juan County down working with them on putting together a HUD system. You know, we're out there, you know, I work with Office of Tourism all the time, and trying to create products, right, if you consider it that, new product that will bring in more tourism and more people to get out and recreate in our land. And as we look at, for example, San Juan County, where we can put a HUD system in, a mountain bike HUD system, very similar to, let's say, the White Room Trail, it goes around Canyonlands for 4 days, but you put huts at the end of every one of those with amazing views, and we start to create some unique product. And we can do that you know, looking at the natural assets of those local communities and saying, what do we do with this? What do we do with San Juan County versus Juab County versus, you know, any of the others? And certainly some of the counties have figured it out and are well down that road, and others are emerging and just starting to pick that up.
Yeah, you know, the attitudes in southern Utah may be changing, and they've totally changed in a few places like St. George, Springdale, certainly Moab, to where they have become recreation economies. But by and large, in all my travels through Utah, tourists have traditionally been pretty much resented, and extraction was always the way to go in terms of attitudes of county commissioners and the like. We've got a forest, let's cut down the trees. We've got coal seams, let's strip mine them. And those are the real jobs. We don't want our kids making beds for tourists. Has been the predominant attitude in southern Utah for generations. Are you able to shift that paradigm at all?
Oh, 100%. You know, it's amazing to see how much momentum there is right now behind outdoor recreation and tourism across the entire state. You've got, if you start to look ahead at some of these communities, like, let's say, Carbon County and Emory County, where coal has been such a dominant part of their economy for so long, but you're looking at a lot of that coal ends up going out to the Intermountain Power Plant. The Intermountain Power Plant, we currently have a contract with California, I believe it's through 2027, and after that, they want it to be all natural gas produced energy. And so, you know, the market for coal continues to shrink, let's say, over time. Well, we need to help them find some new ways to diversify their economy, right? And so more and more, these communities are looking towards new alternatives, and recreation and tourism is certainly one that the state is behind. It continues to grow. You know, if you look out in Emory County, for example, at Joes Valley, where there's been this amazing influx of climbing that's happened around Joes Valley and the boulders that are going on down there, Emory County starts to embrace it. They start to look at building mountain bike trails. They've got a river that comes down from Joes Valley Reservoir that we can tap into, do rafting. I mean, there's ice for ice climbing. There's just a lot that starts to happen when you look at the option.
Now, one of the things I've heard outside of skiing, that a lot of the outdoor activities, you know, you mentioned that for every dollar somebody spends on equipment, they typically spend $4 outside. And I think there's certainly activities like skiing would fall into that category. And then there's other activities where, you know, like fishing, that you know, one of the appeals of fishing is once you buy your gear, it doesn't tend to be that expensive when you do it in your backyard. And how do you balance that out, and how do you think about the right mix? You know, should we have these huts? Should we have the mountain biking trails? Should we have climbing? And or does that even factor in at all? Is it really a head count? The more people we can get out there, the better.
No, it's still a business plan. So it's still looking at the natural assets that we have. I mean, to some degree, it's determined by what we have, right? I mean, Park City area certainly is well served by skiing, mountain biking, what you have going on out there, but you have to look at the different communities and different counties, different natural assets to determine what their core recreational value is, if you want to call it that. So we certainly still have to go through and look at it as a business plan. Just because we're building mountain bike trails, for example, in Daggett County, well, one of the things we have to do in conjunction with that is determine where we're going to have people stay, right? There aren't very many hotels, and there's, you know, and campgrounds, and so coming along with the recreational asset or infrastructure development comes the services industry, and we have to plan for that also. So, you know, whether it's fishing, and it's, you know, beyond just buying worms and everything else, certainly people are spending money on food and gas and you name it. I mean, that's all baked into this bigger number.
So
we have to think about it when we're going into it.
Sure, and I'm glad you mentioned the business plan aspect of it, because this is where I'm going. I'm just curious, you know, what are the outdoor activities where people tend to spend the most outside of their equipment, and what are a couple outdoor activities where people tend to spend less?
Well, I mean, I think you can have it across the board, right? It just all depends on what the activity is, and I mean, when people have their toy haulers and their they're pulling their trailer and their fifth wheel and their, you know, their toys behind it. I mean, they can go somewhere for the weekend and never having spent a dime. But what we're trying to do is create experiences in these communities that are bigger than that, right? It's, as I like to tell people, I mean, at their core, everything is a commodity. So a mountain bike trail, an ATV trail, you name it, they're all third dime a dozen out there, and you can go find them. So how do you create an experience that's above and beyond that? And, you know, just to give you an idea, so in Duab County, up in Eureka, where there's all the old silver and gold mining, you know, they were trying to figure out what to do with all these old roads that led out to these mines. And some of these old mines still have the original comstocks still sticking up, like, you know, was so prevalent around Park City. Well, instead of just saying, hey, we've got kind of an ATV park and here it is, what if we create a passport? When you come into town, you go in and you register for your passport. It gives you the GPS coordinates. It gives you some information on, you know, each one of these mines, how much gold and silver was produced out of each one. And then you go around and you take pictures, and there's informational kiosks at every one of these mines. You're going to have to take your ATVs out to them. But now you're starting to, you know, create an experience more than you are just say, hey, go out and ride this trail and go see what's at the end of it. And that's what we're trying to do, you know, across the board.
You know, I was, I'm not an ATV-er at all. My idea of recreation is you get away from internal combustion engines, but that's just me and most of Park City, actually.
Sure.
But talk about, I was stunned coming up Highway 89 a few years ago and stumbled upon a roadhouse, kind of a tavern restaurant, and they were serving Alaskan crab legs, and I just thought in Paiute County or wherever I was, there is a really tricked out roadhouse that sells steak and crab, and it was all, I guess, because of this Paiute ATV trail. Talk a little bit about what that did to put that underserved, underdeveloped a region on the map.
Sure. And I'm with you. You know, I had no idea that the Paiute ATV trail existed until I actually got into this position. Most likely you're talking about Hoover's down in Marysvale.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. I couldn't remember the name. Yeah, it was a fun place.
So, you know, and ironically, I mean, I went there last year because I heard that Kawasaki, which is the Southern California company, was in Utah for 2 weeks hosting their biggest dealers and doing their 2014 product launch. So I went down and spent a few days with them trying to understand what they were doing in Utah and see how we could facilitate that with them. And, you know, what I've learned is we have just these amazing experiences. I mean, right now the Paiute ATV Trail is one of the most well-traveled you know, ATV trails in the country that we have. They were going in, starting in Beaver, going up and over the Paiute ATV trail into Marysvale, spending the night, and then going back up and over. And, you know, what I've realized, is I'm the same way, right? I'm a mountain biker, backcountry skier, climber, and, you know, I also have a motorcycle. But when you can concentrate that kind of that ATV use onto a designated trail that's really purpose-built for that, right? It is wide enough for a side-by-side. It's really fun. I tell people it's like Caribbean, or it's the Pirates of the Caribbean for adults. I mean, you're flying through this forest. You know, it concentrates the density of that use right there on the trail, and it does wonders for these communities that otherwise, you know, have no real, it's their best.
Yeah, there is no economy in Marysvale.
Yeah, and so you've got this massive ATV group. They allow them to ride their ATVs around on the roads, and, you know, there's some state laws that facilitate that, and it's really done a great thing for them. And I think the only people who haven't caught on to the fact that the Paiute ATV trail exists and aren't using it is the Wasatch Front. Everybody else around the country is down there.
You know, I love the fact that the state of Utah looks at a situation like the outdoor retailers and some of the controversy there, and out of that comes up with a solution where we've got this office that you're leading. That's really the first in the country. You know, my take, and I've said this many times on the air, is the state of Utah is very pro-business. You just mentioned the ATVs and being able to ride on public roads, and there's a state law that facilitates that. You know, that took some lobbying, that took some coordination. And I'm wondering, for the folks out there, your job sounds like a dream job to a lot of young folks. They're hard to get. They usually involve a fair amount of serendipity. You probably never planned a roadmap to be doing what you're doing today. But for folks that are listening that might be interested in doing something like what you're doing, tell us a little bit about your background and how you got introduced to the opportunity.
Wow. Thanks. So, I mean, you know, I'm a native Utah, and I grew up here. I ski raced at Park City in the early 80s and, you know, taught skiing up there after while I was in college. And, you know, I've pretty much just grown up a Utah in what I consider, you know, learning how to do a little bit of everything. Picked up rock climbing in high school, picked up ice climbing in college, and, you know, continued to travel around through the Northwest and Alaska and just kind of did all that. You know, ended up going back. I've run several businesses, went back for an MBA. And so I've really since then just taken on the recreational side just for fun. And after I, you know, was a river guide for a number of years, I realized that it was a lot of fun. I enjoy guiding, just couldn't afford to do it for the rest of my life. So I went out and bought 4 rafts and decided that I would continue to guide just for fun. So most of this has just been inherent with my family. I have 2 daughters now that are 13 and 7, you know, we moved back from San Diego and from Portland just because we enjoy the recreational opportunities here. They enjoy skiing. When we moved to San Diego, we weren't down there 6 months, and they looked at me and they realized it was December, and they started looking around and wondering where their skis were, and they were like, thought I'd pulled a fast one on them, right? But
that there's was no skiing fun. Down here? What do you mean?
Yeah, they're waiting like, for it to get colder.
But, yeah. So that just, was about the beginning of the end. Like, how much longer is Dad's midlife crisis going to last until we get back to Salt Lake where we can ski?
That's funny.
So, you know, most of mine is just, it's all, you know, business background, running businesses, and then just combined with my own personal desire to, you know, to get out there. I just got off the San Juan River last week and headed up to Grand Teton next week, and I'll be rowing the Grand Canyon here with a bunch of Park City people in next month.
So it's all kind of come together for you. Just one follow-up on that for folks that are listening. So you love these outdoor activities. You've been very active. You've got a lot of love for these activities. Do you think this opportunity, the door would have opened for you if you hadn't taken the time to get your MBA?
No.
That's my go-to-school. I mean, that's my go-to-school kid's message.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, ironically, you know, that's what took me to Intel. I did acquisitions up there for a number of years, which allowed me to come back to Utah to start a business, which allowed me, in the end, once I sold that, to move to San Diego, to do international business, which, you know, they all kind of just led together. And certainly, otherwise you would never put on your scope and in your life plan that you would end up doing what I'm doing, because it didn't exist at the time.
Well, Brad, we thank you for joining us this morning, and more importantly, we thank you for your hard work and your successful first year as the director of the Utah Outdoor Recreation Office. Thank you for joining us this morning.
Not a problem. I appreciate you having me, and, you know, it's exciting. I mean, certainly when Utah's out there, we're pushing the boundaries, and more of the people I end up talking to are on a national basis. There's an article coming out in Mountain Magazine this month that will be a complete profile of the state of Utah and what we're trying to do. There's another one that's coming out in the next 2 months from Climbing Magazine, where we took them around southern Utah and just let them climb all the towers, and they got more bought into the whole Office of Outdoor Recreation than they did the, you know, just climbing towers and taking photos. So it's fun to see when the entire country starts to get behind it and realizes that we have something unique, and, you know, I just get to build on the momentum and add to that. So it's a lot of fun. I appreciate you having me on.
Well, Brad, you have a great product to sell. The state
it makes
of Utah.
It easy, doesn't it?
Indeed. I always wonder about the people trying to sell tourism in North Dakota.
That would be tough. That would be tough.
But, no, yeah.
We don't have that problem.
It's an easy sell to have the whole state of Utah at your disposal. Okay, well, thanks for joining us. And next we will be talking about elder financial abuse with Tracy Larson, with the Bank of American Fork, and this is a subject everybody's either going to face or their parents are going to face, so we hope you'll stay tuned for that. This is Mountain Money on KPCW. We're heading for a high of 86 today could hit 88 now that my eyes focus on the little letters. 88 for a high today, 88 again tomorrow. So warm days, summer is definitely here. Get out and play.
This is Ryan Hoffman, branch manager at Mountain West Bank.
And Brooks Harbertson, commercial lender, sponsor of Mountain Money on KPCW.
We offer several products and services for individuals and businesses, including deposit and loan solutions.
Mountain West Bank, Kearns Boulevard, next to the theater, 649-3369.
Division of Glacier Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
Hi, I'm Kelly from San Francisco Design, longtime supporter of KPCW. We provide a mix of European and mountain contemporary home furnishings for a unique Park City lifestyle. Our showrooms are in Park City and Salt Lake, and both offer complete design services. We're on the web at sanfrandesign.com.
This is Sean Railton. I'm an agent with Park City Realty Group. I'm a 30-year Park City resident and a KPCW underwriter. I have been involved in the Park City real estate market since 1994 as an agent, an appraiser, and an investor. I can be reached at 649-1991 or Sean at parkcityrealtygroup.com.
Now is Tracy Larson. She is the Vice President of Program Development at Bank of America Fork to discuss elder financial abuse, which, as I put at the top of the hour, is far too prevalent in the state of Utah. So Tracy, thank you for joining us, and thank you for talking about this important topic.
Thanks for having me.
So we just missed you by a couple of days. I understand from the information you sent the station that June is actually designated as Elder Abuse Awareness Month.
It is through the UN.
So we're gonna continue this awareness and the education into the month of July. And tell us, why is this an important topic?
This is an important topic because our elder demographics are growing. In fact, aging services throughout the state of Utah have referred to it as a silver tsunami. And as we age, other issues become more prevalent, and one of them is financial exploitation. These are individuals who have a pretty set income coming in. Some of them have predominant wealth. Some of them have property. Others, not so much. And as they age and become more vulnerable, either physically more vulnerable or mentally more vulnerable, they open themselves up to a lot of different types of exploitation.
And what kind of things are happening?
There are a lot of different avenues that are taken. Basically, it falls under scams, or you've probably heard of affinity fraud, which we've noted here in Utah as being predominant.
Which is when somebody in their social circle, takes advantage of them.
There are things such as a lot of it falls under caregiver abuse and family. We find that in Utah, about 50% of all financial exploitation is perpetrated by family members who are designated as caregivers. And then you've got instances where you've got people that this is their occupation. They step in what they call a sweetheart scam, where somebody has lost a family member, lost a spouse, are vulnerable. They step in and befriend the individual and take advantage of them from that point.
Yeah, I have done a lot of news stories about this very subject. Your neighboring town from American Fork, Pleasant Grove, had one where the organist at the funeral home had a financial scam going, and he knew every widow because he played at their funeral for their husband, and he'd wait a couple of weeks and then check on them and ask if he could help straighten out the finances, and stole millions of dollars. So this is a totally serious, and people you think you could trust, like family, like the fellow nice man at the funeral home, can perpetrate just unbelievable crimes, and you wonder, you know, how could anybody do that with any conscience at all? And the answer is they have none. So what are the steps to protect yourself? I mean, if you can't necessarily even trust your family. Who can you trust?
Well, and that's the key is awareness, receiving education, both on the caregiver side and on the senior side. There are signs that family members can watch for, that caregivers can watch for. If and we feel as a bank that we're in a unique position because we see people walk in the door every day. The tellers all know their customers. So if they note something that's out of place, a new person has walked in with this individual, they're putting somebody else on an account with them, then that might trigger a red flag. And also just watching for patterns in their spending that might be different. If your grandmother is used to shopping at Dillard's for shoes and all of a sudden there's a charge on there from the Wynn Hotel in Las Vegas, then that's a difference in a pattern. And so there are things like that that can be watched for. One of the important things that we really preach is checks and balances. When you have caregivers, there are other family members that are probably involved as well. You may have family members that are taking care of one aspect of their life and somebody else taking care of another aspect. And those can be watched over in a variety of ways. Most banks will offer different products and services that can help to mitigate some of this exposure. At Bank of American Fork, we have what's called a view-only account, which is just basically online banking, but it gives somebody that the senior can designate, someone that they trust, can be designated to watch over their accounts and see if there are any pattern changes, if there are any charges that the senior wouldn't know about. So there are things of that nature that can be taken care of as well.
So that's a check and a balance, and which is a great thing. It's kind of a after the fact. Are there any things that can be done before the fact to prevent some of this abuse to happen?
Well, and that's mainly families need to sit down and talk, and we find that that is something that's very hard to do. We don't want to sit down and talk about what ifs. If an individual is aware that dementia is setting in and isn't willing to talk with the family, that's going to be problematic for that family a few months down the road. And so that's the big key, is sitting down and determining what the senior's needs are, making sure that they have all of their needs met, including their social needs. If they start to feel isolated, that can create a vulnerability that somebody, a new neighbor down the street, walks up and knocks on the door to be a friend. That opens them up to that vulnerability. So just making sure that they look at what all of the needs are and mapping out a plan, the family mapping out a plan as to what they can do to mitigate any exposure.
I would think, most certainly nearly everyone would like to age in place in their home. And that opens up a parade of near strangers coming in on a daily basis to help with bathing, help with just laundry and fixing meals and so on. How can you assure yourself that the people coming in are quality, honest people?
Well, I'm sure that it's going to be doing homework and making sure that if you're going outside the family, that you're conducting background checks, looking at the companies that are providing these individuals. The majority of our caretakers, our caregivers, are family members. But again, it's a matter of making sure that in the home, things are secure. When we let someone into our home, there's the possibility that if things are left out unsecure, that they can be found. So using safes, making sure that private information is secured, things of that nature, if you're going to let someone in your home. Another thing when you're in your home is to be careful of who comes to your door. If someone comes to suggest that your roof needs some repairing or you need a new air conditioner, helping a senior understand that they don't make those decisions by themselves, that they have family members that they need to consult with to make sure that
Even one step further, I've told my girls who are now becoming young women, you know, they're 14 and 11, just because somebody knocks at the door doesn't mean you have to answer it.
Exactly.
Right? So if you look out the window, it's not somebody from the neighborhood, you don't know who it is, why would you answer the door? And
exactly.
I think that's true for all of us, adults, but particularly young kids as well as older folks mm-hmm. when they are more susceptible. And even if they are a reputable business person trying to drum up business to repair, do legitimate repairs, you know, if you need a roof repair, if you need your air conditioning fixed, use the Yellow Pages. Talk to your neighbors. Find out who they recommend. Don't just answer the door and
That's
hope that
point.
It's a good person.
The other thing, too, is answering your phone and
That's
making
true.
Sure that, and we try to help seniors understand that. We reach out to the community as much as we can. We appreciate opportunities like this to talk to them because there are things that are problematic when they answer a phone and someone asks for a social security number, an account number. Banks will never do
there's
that.
There's a scam. I've heard that, you know, they'll say your grandson, you know, unfortunately is in jail
and
we need this information to get him out. You know, he's on vacation somewhere and they try to help. What about some structural protections for senior citizens? For instance, a trust. Do you think, first off, does your bank offer trust services? And do you think that trust services are helpful in this type of situation?
Oh, absolutely. We don't offer trust services at Bank of American Fork, but other larger banks do have trust departments that can set those up or through an attorney. But that would be the first thing that we would recommend is that a senior and a family set up a trust.
And can you tell our audience just briefly describe what a trust is?
Well, it's just putting all of their assets into one place, which is watched over and protected by a fiduciary, and there are certain guidelines that are given for that. The senior can designate who gets what, when, and how all of that operates. So now there are other options because sometimes that may not be an option if pricing is an issue. Most banks, and what we encourage banks to do, is to know their customer and to be able to structure accounts. We preach against joint accounts. When you put a signer on your account, you are giving them ownership of your funds. So if there is someone on an account that, and also what that does is it puts into place liability for their if there are tax issues, if there are lawsuits, anything of that nature. And so there are ways that you can structure accounts to mitigate liability and also just making sure that the checks and balances are in place, that somebody is watching over that account.
So what, just briefly, for somebody that's looking for an account, what should they be asking for? Let's say they need a family member to help pay the bills. What type of account would you suggest?
You know, it really is any type of account they want, but what you want to do is protect the nest egg. And so if you have a primary account, instead of putting a joint owner on, open up a secondary account and put an automatic transfer and only move the amount of money over that's needed for the monthly finances. And you can put a limited power of attorney on that account instead of having them as a joint signer. At least that way, if the temptation arises, you're only going to be out a monthly expense rather than your full nest egg.
Yeah, Doug, I'll ask this one of you as well as a financial advisor and planner. You know, the nest egg may live at the bank or it may live with a financial advisor. And if no safeguards have been set up, what can you really do if someone who you know as your customer to be elderly calls or walks in and says, I want a $250,000 taken out of my account? It's their money.
Yeah, you know, that's the benefit of having a relationship either with the people at your bank or, as you mentioned, your financial advisor. Unfortunately, occasionally that does happen. And we'd rather drag our feet and we'll wait and get verification from our client directly. And maybe that person does have power of attorney and they, you know, have the right to get the money sooner than that. But you know, so be it. We're fiduciaries, and we're protecting our client, and we're going to wait till we can get verification. That's how we do it. And, usually if somebody's getting upset with you about that, that's not a good sign, because we should all be on the same page looking to protect the person. In this case, that would be my client. What about at the bank? If somebody comes in and wants to withdraw something, if it seems fishy, you just say, no, we've got some verifications we have to do, I would imagine, right?
Well, and that's what we train. We train and train with our tellers and our new account reps, and really all bank employees, that if someone comes in and some red flag is flying high, that we take some time to ask some questions. If there's a good relationship, which a lot of the bankers have with their customers, they can ask some questions about the pattern or what they're doing. And we have had situations where there was nothing we could do, that a customer was, that's what they were going to do, and we can't tell them no. That's their money, as you've stated. But we do escalate if we do see something and we aren't able to resolve it at the time. We do escalate that to a specific individual at our bank. And we take a look and do some research, and there are often times that we report to Adult Protective Services.
And in the day of the internet age and everything becoming efficient and quick, it just speaks to the importance of having a relationship. Tracy, we thank you for joining us this morning. Our guest has been Tracy Larson, Vice President of Program Development at Bank of American Fork. If folks want to follow up and get additional information, how can they do that?
There's actually a couple of things that they can do. If they go online and to the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, CFPB, if they Google that and go into CFPB's blog, there is a whole section on older adults, older Americans, and there's some excellent information there that they are putting out regularly that talk about relationships with fiduciaries, managing money, and that. And also, one other resource is on Legal 55. Let me look at this so I make sure I'm telling you the correct one. It's a book called Navigating Your Rights, the Utah Legal Guide for Those 55 and Over. A free book can be ordered from legalguide55.utah.gov, and it is an excellent resource.
Okay, well, good advice. It's one of those things that's easy to put off, but it's best if you don't. Thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
And we'll be back to talk.
It's a mystery.
Okay. We'll be
the folks that roast, grind, brew, and repeat.
Well,
stay tuned.
I think you've given some pretty strong hints there, but we'll be back with them in just a moment.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided by Longreimer Weiniger Bepler, Estate Planning Family Law, LRW-LAW.com. Park City Nursery. We know what grows. ParkCityNursery.com. Brett Stimson, mortgage assistant for home purchases. 801-201-3484. The Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you.
Local programming all day. Only in Park City. Only on KPCW. 91.9 FM in Park City and the Heber Valley. 88.1 FM in Colville and Camas. This is KPCW. Park City.
Back to Mountain Money. In the preview, you heard me read kind of the mission statement, which typically mission statements are a little boring. Yours is anything but boring. And here's what it starts with. We believe in quality over quantity, community over corporate, planet over profit, and sweating the small stuff as well as the big stuff, which is all wonderful. And I haven't told people yet who you guys are. You guys are with Public Coffee Roasters, and our guests in studio with us are Dylan Sands and Shelby Cushman. I'm guessing you guys are the founders of Public Coffee Roasters. Is that correct?
We are not.
You're not? Okay.
No.
So,
operating managers.
Yeah. Operating managers. Okay, welcome. And where is your location?
We have our flagship location in Salt Lake City. There it's a 13,000 square foot warehouse where we have a roasting facility, a two-story cafe, an event venue, and our corporate offices and whatnot. And then up here in Park City in the Kimball Art Center, we have a cafe as well that we opened in mid-March.
You know, I think your mission statement fits perfectly for a coffee shop, right? I mean, it's you typically go in there. It's a relatively small purchase. Mm-hmm. It's typically a couple dollars. It's an affordable luxury, and that's what you want to be thinking about when you're drinking the cup of coffee. Is that the place you're doing business with is doing good? And
absolutely.
You know, I also go to Starbucks occasionally, but it's not Fortune 500. It's not Starbucks. It's something different.
No.
How have you found that? Having that do well by doing good, which is what I would call your mission statement. How mm-hmm. have you found that's helped you from a business standpoint?
You know, it's been great for us to be a presence in Park City and bring this kind of next wave of coffee culture up here. It's kind of separated right now between first wave, second wave, and third wave of coffee in America. First wave was like Maxwell House and Folgers, you know, like the really big.
But, you know, I was on companies. Vacation. we rented a house, and the guy bought a jar of Folgers coffee, I think it was. Might have been Maxwell House.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, well, it's here. I might as well use it. It was awful. I had forgotten how horrible that coffee was. I haven't had a couple of Maxwells in a long time.
The first wave, we hope, has washed over the beach.
Yes, that wave
you know, I think it has for the most part. So, you know, what we're doing is sourcing beans from small farms. We're going directly to those farms, or we're using one importer who goes directly to those farms, is on the ground all year long, cupping with those farmers. And one of the big differences with direct trade sourcing, which is what we do, is that those producers in those countries are given the opportunity to negotiate pricing with us, whereas with fair trade, those prices for those beans are set beforehand, and those farmers are not given the opportunity to negotiate and really develop relationships with the roasters.
Okay, so Shelby, talk a little bit about the product line. So are you second wave or you're third wave? What's different? What's new in the coffee roasting and brewing and selling business? And what all product lines do you have at the Kimball?
So we would be considered definitely third wave. Kimball Art Center, I think, kind of setting us apart is that, you know, we offer single origin coffees that we do what is called like a slow bar or a pour over method. People that might have been in there have not seen that kind of way of doing coffee before, where we brew it single cup at a time, and we do it in a way where we're pouring the coffee so that you get the most flavors out of the coffee, sort of like wine, I guess, where you have a really nice glass of wine, you're sipping it, and you can taste notes and different flavors. It's the same way with our coffee. So yeah. we
okay, it's not coming out of a thermos pot. It is one brew for one cup.
Exactly. Yeah. We do that as well, but in this method takes a little bit longer. It takes about 3 minutes, but it's worth the wait for sure.
Absolutely.
And I'm curious, you know, 3 minutes doesn't sound like a lot of time, but we all think we're very, very busy.
Yeah.
Would you say half of your coffee is the pour-over style, or is it a fourth? What's the split?
I mean, in Park City, I would say it's very new, so right now it's probably maybe a third, but it's growing. People are loving it. The first cup they have, they'll come back and they'll get another one.
Well, and what's nice about that is there's probably very little competition in the pour over. So if somebody likes the pour over, well, you got to go to the Kimball and get the coffee from you guys.
Exactly. Yeah.
Was there a concern? I know there used to be a different coffee purveyor in that space before you. And typically, when I see a retail concept that's been in a location, for whatever reason, it wasn't big enough as a success that they wanted to stay there, and then a new concept comes in with a very similar theme, that typically tends to be fairly risky. Were you guys concerned with that, and how has that played out?
Not at all. Honestly, it's been really, really great to be up here and kind of integrate into the community up here and become a presence and show people a different way of doing things with coffee.
I mean, we did get a lot of customers because there has been a coffee shop in that location for years.
So they're used to getting their caffeine fixed.
So even if they didn't know
we
were there, there's a coffee shop in that vicinity, so we would get those customers, and they are all pleasantly surprised. So
good.
And then is there a food line or at least a snack line there as well?
Yes. So we're doing something quite different as well. This is sort of third wave as well, is that we offer, we have a gourmet toast menu.
Haven't heard of that before.
You haven't heard of the toast craze. It's coming. Yep. We're the first ones doing
it. Smaller bite size, not as big of a snack. No,
it's a big old piece of toast.
Slice of toast.
Texas toast.
Oh, yeah. We get our bread from Red Bicycle, which is a small bakery up in Park City.
We're very familiar with that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Addictive bread as well.
Yeah, so, great stuff. Absolutely. So, yeah, it's a coffee and toast concept.
Okay.
What's the variety of toast? I can only think of French toast and cinnamon toast and toast.
We do have cinnamon toast.
We do have cinnamon toast. We have 11 different toasts. Some of them are cinnamon sugar French toast style. Others we source jams from Amour Spreads, which is a really small company in Salt Lake, making artisan jams. So those are just all paired with different cheeses and breads.
And if you haven't had coffee and toast, it's such a great combination.
It's a good combo.
Yeah, it's so simple.
You've sold me. Later this week, you'll be seeing me down there. And again, what I like about this is it's an affordable luxury. I love Teslas. Frankly, I can't afford a Tesla. But what you guys are doing is really cool, and maybe it costs you 50 cents more than going someplace else, right? And you get this nice experience. And I think surrounding our lives with little touch points like this really enhances our life and doesn't dent the pocketbook. So good luck to you guys. Again, the company is the Public Coffee Roaster over at the Kimball Arts Center. You guys are about to get pretty busy. It's going to be a busy weekend here. Well, it was a busy weekend last weekend and this one coming up.
Yeah, the 4th of July was
awesome. Yeah, and this should be a busy weekend as well. Our guests have been Dylan Sands and Shelby Cushman of Public Coffee Roaster at the old Kimball Arts Center. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks
it's
for
good
having
to be
us.
Here.
And we'll be back to wrap up Mountain Money after this. Programming brought to you by the KPCW Broadcasters Club. Major donors who are committed to securing a sound future for KPCW. Thank you to our gold level members, including Jeff and Leslie Edison, Jill Johnson, and Bob and Susan Richer. To find out how you can become a member of KPCW's Broadcasters Club, click the silver microphone at kpcw.org.
Hi, this is Gary Cole with Cole Sport. Thanks to the community and our generous supporters for a great back alley bash. What fun was had by all, and we raised important funding for KPCW, our local community radio station, locals helping locals. Thanks to the team at Cole Sport, Budweiser, and the guys from Big Four Distributing, The Bridge Cafe, Butcher's Chop House and Bar, Devanza's Pizza, High West Distillery and Saloon, Kumbaya Kitchen, Pepsi, and the Sweeney Brothers. We look forward to next year.
Welcome back to Mound Money. We'd like to thank our great sponsors. We've only got a minute left, but our sponsors, we couldn't do the show without you guys, so thank you so much. Park City Realty Group, Mound West Bank, Iron Mound Group, Park City Chamber, Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, Utah Properties, San Francisco Designs, and Jones, Waldo, Holbrook, and McDonough. Thank you, guys. We really appreciate your support.
And thanks to our great guests this week, Brad Peterson, Tracy Larson, and Dylan and Shelby from Publix Coffee roasters. Doug, we only have 30 seconds left, but I just got to take that 30 seconds to brag about KPCW has been nominated by the National Association of Broadcasters as Non-Commercial Station of the Year, the Marconi Award. Only five nominees out of I don't know how many non-commercial stations there are. Many.
There have to be thousands, though.
We've been nominated as one of the top five, and we're going for the gold like everybody does. We'll see if it happens.
When do we find out?
In September. And it's time for the news now. It's KPCW Park City.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. The Islamic militant group Hamas.